Good morning. This morning I'm going to set before us one scene in which Jesus is interacting with the disciples to try to form them for the mission which he has for them in the future. This scene actually takes place after the crucifixion. You'll know that after Christ was killed, the Christians who gathered, they began to proclaim that he was arisen, that death couldn't hold on to him. But there was some time between the moment when he rose and when they all began to trust that. And this story takes place in that time. And so listen now. It's a story for a group of disciples whose leader has unexpectedly departed from them. And now they have to ask, what are we going to do? And I chose it for this morning because it seemed fitting, given what I shared 2 weeks back. If you're here for the first time, welcome. My name is Christian. I've been in this church since it started about 14 years ago. And 2 weeks back, I shared with those who were gathered that my wife, Michelle, and I have been in prayer, listening to God like we had never really before for a long time, and had become confident that God was saying to us, it's time for you to go. We shared that 2 weeks back. It was hard for some of you. And I want you to understand, it was hard for me and Michelle. Sometimes the things that God calls us to are hard. I want to say a bit about that before we get into the text. It's going to be in John. If you want to be distracted from what I say next, you know, you can flip around in your Bible. After we shared this, we got a lot of messages, and I began to read some of them, but I want to say 2 things. They were encouraging to me in a beautiful way, but they were heartbreaking to me too. So I stopped reading them. I have 63 unread text messages now on my phone and a lot of emails from you, and I'll get to them. I want to say thank you for reaching out to me and Michelle like you have. You cannot know what it means to me. You cannot. The conversations that we've shared, the care and love that I felt from you, I wish I could help you know how mutual it is. I may be eloquent. I'm not good enough to say it. You have shaped me and my wife. You have. And today, 2 weeks back when I shared we would be going, I said I'd be preaching on the first week and the second week in July. I've been invited to travel next week. I have to go. So this will be the last time I preach with you. And so in thinking about this time, I thought, what would be the best thing to share? And that's why I chose what I did this morning. A scene where Jesus has departed from the disciples, but then he comes to them to tell them what they need to know for the mission which they still have. I'm convinced that Park Church still has a mission. I'm also 100% certain that the best thing that this church can do is to listen to Jesus. And that's why I chose a story where he shows the disciples what the mission is. I also know without any question I'm not Jesus. Okay? So I'm not going away like Jesus went away. I'm going away like Christian goes away. I am, as best I can be, a follower of his, like the rest of you. We're all disciples together. But I am also in this moment given this opportunity to help you as a group see what Jesus did with his disciples to help them see what the mission was ahead. For some of you, many of you, I hope, this will be the place where you continue to follow Jesus together. What he did with those disciples is he told them, you might think that it's time for you to give up. It's not. You still have work to do. That's what he did. For others of you, it may be a time for you to find another place to serve God. You must seek him. That's what Michelle and I have done. I ask you to do that. For Park Church as a whole, for those who will be here, and even if you won't, this will be a good moment to see how Jesus forms people for the work ahead. The Gospel of John is filled with brilliant stories that depict Jesus' interaction with the disciples where he tries to form them for what he has. In this moment, it's after the resurrection. If you know the Bible well, you know that in all four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there are recorded moments where Jesus interacts with the disciples after he rose from the grave. If you really know it well, you'll also understand that in his exchanges with them, he's constantly wanting to form them or shape them for the work that they still have to do. This is a basic belief for Christians. That to be a Christian is to follow Jesus and to receive from him the work that he has for you in the future. That's what Jesus does in the resurrection here. He has work for this church, for every church, and for every individual. So we'll look together now at what he does for this group when he comes and encounters them. One bit of background. Some of you will know this. The disciples all had jobs before they met Jesus. Okay, he encountered them while they were at work. Can someone help out here? What were a lot of the disciples' profession? What did they do? Yeah, you, gosh, A plus. They were a lot of fishermen, right? This scene is at the place where they used to fish before they met Jesus. Okay, it's in John 21. Let me read it, and we'll stop. And let me say one more thing before we get into it. Three very simple answers in this story for disciples like you. Here they are. You ready? The first answer is to the question, how will we do our mission going ahead? That's question number one, how. There's going to be an answer here. The second one is, who is this mission for after all? You know, churches can be pretty confused about that one. There's a lesson here for who. And then the last one is what. In the most basic sense, what is the mission that God has for disciples? All three of those, okay? How, who, and what. And we'll start with how. Here's verse 1 in chapter 21. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, I'm going fishing. They said to him, we will go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. The setting is ordinary. This is not a group of friends who are out fishing for fun. This is a group of commercial fishermen who have all decided to go back to what they used to do before they met Jesus. And it makes sense that they did that. When Jesus first met these guys, they were standing by the sea with nets in their hands, and they were fishing for, what were they fishing for? Fish, obviously. There comes this rabbi along to them, and he tells them, you follow me, and I will make you fish for people. Now, some of you don't know this story. It's remarkable. Jesus was a powerfully magnetic person who drew others into his presence because of the divinity that was in him, that was in no one else. Men and women were so attracted to him because they saw that he had something that they knew they needed, even if they didn't know what it was. Have any of you ever experienced that in Jesus? Have you? Some of you have? He said to these men, you come with me, and I'm going to change you from people who fish for fish into men who fish for people. And they did. They dropped their nets to go with him. This is remarkable. This is a man who had the power to bring people along with him who gave up everything to go. And they did. They went with him for years, and they saw in Jesus what they'd never seen before, a man who had the power to transform people by his presence, especially through his grace and love, which was unique. It was remarkable. If you've read through the New Testament and imagine what it would have been like, you will have been touched yourself by the things you see Jesus doing to others. I'm right, aren't I? But then listen. They're having a meal with him, and he says, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to be turned over, and it's going to be one of you who's going to do it. I mean, imagine hearing that, and imagine being Jesus in that moment. The people that you've poured yourself into are going to turn you over with a kiss, with a smile. So it happens that evening, he's praying, and the guards come, and Judas kisses him. They arrest him. They bind him up, and one tries to stop it, but then no, and now they're watching as their master and friend is being tried, and no one defends him. They just sit and watch. One of the closest ones, one of the fishermen here, he's off in the distance warming himself by a little fire while the light of the world is on trial, and it's a mockery. It's not true. And someone says, you know him, right? He says, no, I don't know him. And so all of his friends abandon him. They watch him die, and then they go their separate ways. And they have conversations. What should we do now that he's gone? And what they say is, well, let's go back to what we used to do. And Peter says, I'm going fishing. Does anyone want to come with me? And they say, yeah. And he gathers up a group of six other guys, and seven of them go out onto the water like a commercial fisherman does at night to fish. And this is what happens. That night they caught nothing. Do we have any fishermen in here? Anyone? You can raise your hand. You know the expression, like, there's no such thing as a bad day of fishing, right? If you tell a commercial fisherman that, they'll punch you in the face. Because there is a bad day of fishing if it's your job. They worked all night. They got nothing. Look again with me at who's there. Some of these men named, their stories can be read in the Bible. Others are not, which is cool. It's like a mystery. They had some story, but there in that group, there's Peter. There's Thomas, called the twin. There's Nathaniel. I love his story. It's in the very beginning of John. There's the sons of Zebedee, and then two others. I added it up. That's seven. Now, here's an aside. In ancient literature, numbers always matter, especially in the Gospel of John. He loves numbers. Does anybody know what the number seven represents? It's like completion, perfection. It's everything that's there. Right? This is a complete group of disciples, and they're all working together, and they're helping each other, and they're at a common task. And let me tell you, I'll say this as a pastor. It is great when disciples get together, a perfect group of disciples gets together and does hard work. It's what should happen in this church moving forward. How will you do your mission? You should get together and work. But listen, here's the first lesson. If you work, even if you work all night, and Jesus is not with you, you will have nothing to show for it. Because that night, even though there were experts, even though they used all of their experience, even though they put all of their effort into it, they didn't catch a single fish. Because though they were at work together, in that group, Jesus is not there. You see that? And that is a first lesson for us, as it was for them, and here it is for Park Church. If you will carry the mission forward, as I believe God wants you to, you will get nowhere if you try to do it without Jesus. Absolutely nowhere. Doesn't matter how smart you are, how hard you try, how many good decisions you make, all of the effort you put into it will get you not a single fish. You can fish all night. Now look, this is one of the points that John wants to make in the beginning of this story. Disciples can work hard, but if Jesus is not there, they're not going to get anywhere. But that's not the end of the first lesson, because Jesus actually shows up in this moment. I already told you that, right? He shows up, and watch what happens, okay? The action continues in verse 4. Just after daybreak. Now, I'm going to stop. That's important because professional fishermen on the Sea of Tiberias know that if you want to catch a fish, you better get out before the sun goes down and fish all night. Because once the sun comes up, they're not going to bite anymore. So that means it's time to give up. No more reasonable hope of catching anything if you're using your reason. But just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach. Now he's here. Now he's in the scene. But the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Just an aside, Jesus is with us. If we don't think so, it's because we ourselves, for some reason, are not seeing him. Do you hear me? And it happens a lot. If it happened to the first disciples, it means in our own day, we can have a church that's all gathered together. Jesus himself can be right in the midst, speaking the truth, and followers of his who gave up everything to follow him can ignore him, and they do. Did you know that? But look, this is where it gets good. I'm going to ease up, okay? Jesus said to them, children, you have no fish, have you? They answered him, no. Imagine this, right? You're a professional fisherman. You're coming into the shore. You have your nets. They're obviously empty. And some guy on the beach says, hey, you haven't caught anything, have you? Oh, no. Thanks for pointing it out. Gee, you're great. They answered him, no. He said to them, now there's something in Jesus even when we don't know it's him. His power does not depend on our recognition. He is almighty. Do you know that? The Lamb who let himself die on a cross has all the power. He does. He says to them, after they say, no, we have nothing, cast the net to the other side of the boat and you will find some. That doesn't make any sense. The sun's up, and they already fished all night, and they're the experts, and he's some guy on the beach. But his word is mighty, and when disciples who are gathered together do his work, hear his word, and do what he says, the exact opposite happens of fishing all night and catching nothing. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. And this completes the first lesson for us as disciples with regard to mission going forward. If we try to do good work without Jesus, there will be nothing in the nets. If Jesus is attended to and we do what he says, there will be so many fish you won't even be able to haul in the nets. I'll make this as simple as I can. If this church will move forward, it will happen when these disciples gathered. And some of you are here for the first time. You might say, it's time for me to become one of this group. We'll listen to Jesus and do what he says. If you do that, you will not be able to haul the nets in. There will be so many fish. Do you see how clear that message is? Now, you might say, what does it mean for us to hear Jesus and do what he says? And then a lot of you are clever enough to know that there's places in the Bible where it's hard to understand Jesus, right? You can think of some of those things. Well, fine. Set those aside and think of the places in the Bible where it's easy enough to understand him. Do you know that there are plenty of places where it's easy to understand what Jesus says? If someone sins against you, go to that person and talk to them about it. That's easy enough to understand, and it can be done. A group that chooses not to do that will not expect to catch much. Pray for your enemies and don't persecute them, for those who harm you. Do not, all of these words of Jesus are easy enough, aren't they? Kids can understand them. Do not worry. Trust me. My Father knows what you need, and he'll prepare it for you. If you want something, ask for it. Knock and seek. Jesus says all these things. So letting Jesus be in the work you do, the how of mission, to do it with Jesus is as simple as hearing him and doing what he says. And last lesson before we go on to the next one, if he tells you to do something that your mind says impossible, it won't work, do it anyway. Seriously, cast the nets on the other side of the boat? We were fishing all night. What are you talking about? Do it anyway. You will have a hard time hauling in the nets if you do that. That's the first lesson. Now, the story, of course, doesn't end there. Let me tell you what happens next, and then we're going to go to the second lesson. They haul it in, and as you would guess, they now know the identity of the man on the shore. They know it's Jesus. How would you feel in that moment? I mean, think about it. Would you be psyched? Can I get a little of feeling that? Yeah. Peter, in the story, he's so excited, he jumps out of the boat and just goes to the beach. He forgets about everything else because he just wants to be there again, even though he was the biggest failure of them all. I mean, it teaches us something about Jesus. He's the kind of person you can stab him in the back and he'll still welcome you. That's amazing. Peter goes to him. The rest of the disciples, they begin hauling the nets and they get the boats into shore. They move up onto the beach and there he is. And then as they come onto the shore and they haul up all of the fish, we get to oversee a conversation between them. That's what happens next. I want you to look at it with me. There's an exchange between Jesus and these disciples who now know that their master, though he's gone from them in one way, is still there. And they're already beginning, I'm sure of it, they're already beginning to learn the lessons for their future mission. I mean, in that moment, I'm sure they're thinking, okay, from now on, listen to him. Here's what happens next. Verse 9. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there. Listen, John uses all kinds of details on purpose. This is an aside, all right? I'm just throwing this one in there because this is the last time I preach here, so I'm going to throw some stuff in. Read the Gospel of John when Jesus is betrayed and you'll see another charcoal fire. That's where Peter warms himself, where he betrayed his master. And you keep reading ahead and you'll see when Jesus forgives this betrayer. It's so powerful. But here it is, a charcoal fire with fish on it and bread, breakfast sandwich. Seriously, it is. I'm hungry. It's so real. I mean, that's what this is. It's real. If Jesus has not been this real to you, don't be satisfied. Keep looking. I mean it. Jesus is not a religious idea for us to think about or talk about together when we're in church. Who cares about ideas? This is the living Lord who's back to tell those disciples, I've got something for you to do. He's telling you that. You've got something for you to do. You must learn. First, you'll trust him. Here's the second lesson. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you've just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. There's another detail that stands out to me that is remarkable. 153 fish. Why? You know, think about it. Did Peter come and see his master there and say, hey, hold on, I know you've got something to tell me, but before you do, I just want to count these. One, two. No, I seriously want to be able to tell my friends how many I got. You're important, but three, four. No. When John uses a number and doesn't say about 150, which you'd expect him, when he says 153, he means to teach us something. And this number is for us together, and then for you when I'm not here, a picture of what the mission of the church, who the mission of the church is for. I mean, we're not the first ones, if you think, what does that number mean, to wonder. There were, in the ancients, interpreters, there was an obsession with numbers because they were symbolic. And so everyone wanted to know, what does 153 mean? One of the first things that people in the old days thought is it must refer to the Trinity. And I think that had less to do with this Bible story and more to do with where they were in the history of the church. Origen said, oh, it's the Trinity, obviously. 153 is 50 plus 50 plus 50. That's three and three more. Trinity, Trinity. That's not very compelling to me. Cyril of Alexandria said, no, it's got something to do with mission. Doesn't it seem obvious that this has to do with mission? Oh, it's 100 for the heathen. It's 50 for the Jews. And then there's three left over. So that means, help me out here, Trinity. It must be the Trinity. Augustine, you've heard that name? Or Augustine? He was a mathematician. He was clever. He realized that the number 153 is the sum of 17 plus 16 plus 15 plus 14 all the way to 1. If you add those all up, you get 153. 17 is a number that's composed of 10 and 7. There are 10 commandments. We obey the 10 commandments when we have the 7 spiritual gifts. It must be about obedience. And then he said, oh yeah, and if you put 17 dots and then 16 above them and 15 all the way up, guess what shape you have at the end? A triangle, and an equilateral triangle with three sides and three equal angles. It's the Trinity! Listen, if I were John and I wanted to teach a story about the Trinity, I would have had them catch three fish, right? I'm serious. Or if I was really theological savvy, it would have been one fish with three heads, right? Jerome, St. Jerome. Have any of you heard of him? Some church historians will know that name, St. Jerome. This is a guy that I think figured out what 153 means. He scanned the ancient literature widely. There was an old scientific manual from generations even before John's day. I'm going to find the name of it. This is, to me, fascinating. It was called the Holoeutica. It was a handbook for scientists in which those who were interested in sort of the animal kingdom collected all the available information about what's out there in the world. They quantified, they counted, they gathered up the species, and they put it in this handbook. It was translated from Greek into Latin. There were poets who were fascinated with it. One of the poets' names was Oppianus Silex, and he was a poet whose poetry became popular, and in Jerome's day, he studied this poet. And this poet knew about the Holoeutica. And listen to what Jerome discovered in one of his poems. Listen to this. And this is a quote from Jerome. Writers on the nature and property of animals who have learned the Holoeutica in Latin and in Greek, among whom is the poet Oppianus Silex, say that there are 153 species of fish in the world. And that means on the day when John penned this and the communities read it, if you asked a fisherman, if I were to catch one of every kind of fish, not leaving any fish out, how many fish would I catch? They would say, why, there are 153 different species, so you would catch that many. Do you see what John wants to show through Jesus' power here to the disciples of who this mission is for? For every kind of person. The disciples needed to learn this. Do you know why? They were racist. They were. They grew up in it. They grew up thinking there are people in the world who you hate because that's the way their families formed them. Back in that old world, people divided themselves up around all kinds of things. There were the inside and the outside, and Jesus Christ came to shatter these divisions completely in his own person. And he did this in his life as he drew near to the outsiders and loved the unlovable and touched the untouchable and crossed boundaries that no religious person was supposed to cross, and they hated him for it. And here, even after his death and in his power of resurrection, he's saying again to the disciples, listen, if you are going to figure out how to carry this forward, how, that is to be with me and listen, then you also must know who this is for, and it's for everyone. And that's the second lesson for Park Church going forward. Who is this place for? Every single kind of person. If there's a kind of person that you don't like, it's for them. If there's a kind of person that you're afraid of and you want to stay away from, for them too. If there's a friend of yours who thinks I'll never come to church, it's not for me. Don't you know people think that? They're wrong. It's for them. Because the mission that Jesus initiated and then sent under its way through the power of his disciples with his spirit on into the future is for every single kind of person. That's what John wants them to see here. It's a second lesson and it's beautiful. It means that if you are in this place moving forward, that you must not only be a person who says we have to listen to Jesus always, you also must be a person who's on the lookout for the ways that we will try to push people away, because we will. We can't do that. Jesus doesn't. He does not. He wants them all to come. That leads to the third lesson, and that is the lesson of what. So what is the mission actually for? If it's a mission going forward that will require our attentiveness to Jesus, that we must listen to him, okay. And if it's for everyone, fine. What actually is the mission? And that also is in this scene in a simple way, in a symbolic way. You know this, right? That, as I said, Jesus told these disciples, you're going to be fishers of men. Here the fish are all the people that are brought to Jesus. And that's the third lesson. If you see again in verse 10 what Jesus told them, here is the what of their mission going forward. Jesus said to them in verse 10, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. Now this is symbolic, we don't want to push it too far, but if we have to boil down the simplicity of what this third lesson is, which is what is the mission, it's as simple as this, to bring people near to Jesus. Did you hear that? How simple that is? I say don't push it too far because after this, I think they cook some of those fish and eat them. Okay? So that's not a part of the what, okay? But bringing people close to Jesus is what the church is for. And I have to say it so simply because the church can be such a mess and think it's supposed to be about all kinds of other nonsense. No, we're supposed to make people think like us. Who cares what you think? Thank God that Jesus himself doesn't base his acceptance of you on what you think, because you'd be utterly lost because your mind is filled with messes. So is mine. Or maybe the mission is to help people behave differently. How's that working for you? No, Jesus can handle that. The mission is to bring people to him and let him take care of that. No, maybe the mission is to be very clear and concrete with people out in the world with what's wrong with them and where wrong and right is. Stop. He's the judge, not you. Thank God, because he'll judge you with mercy and grace even as you try to take his place as the judge. Just bring people to Jesus. That's the mission. No, don't we want to promote our church and make ourselves look good and have a name for ourselves and grow? Who cares about your church? I mean, that might sound a little harsh. But I'm serious. The church, it matters only insofar as it brings people to Jesus. And of course, you should care about it so that it can be the instrument that God uses to bring people to Jesus. And do you know why that is the mission? Because there's no better place to be than near Jesus. And that is true for all of you and everyone else you've ever met. Because when you're close to Jesus, You never see how desperately needy you are. And some of you think, well, I'm really needy. Yeah, you get close to Jesus and let the light of his truth shine upon you, and you'll see even more of how needy you are. But in that exact same moment, as you finally stop hiding how needy you are and let his grace and truth expose your sin and your wretchedness and your messiness, at the same moment you see that his love for you is even deeper still. That it goes higher than the heavens, and you cannot even imagine how much you matter to him because of his great love for you. And that's where you need to be, near him. You need that. And that's what the church is for. To be the community of disciples who listens to Jesus and goes out to everyone in order to bring them close to him, even as we desperately need to be close to him ourselves. Is there anyone else in here who needs to be close to him? You know that everything in your life can be altogether awful, and if you're close to him, it's okay. Do you know that? If you don't know that, oh God, I pray that you would. I've known that from my own experience. Nobody here knows how hard it's been to walk for me. Jesus is so good. Did you hear that? Oh, when I'm close to him, he is so good. You know why sometimes Jesus puts a disciple through a hard time? So that they can stand before others and say how good he is still. Did you hear me? It's true. You should be near him. And this is what this church should be. It should be a place which has disciples in it. And there's a lot of you in here. And some of you, gosh, you've just come recently. Or you're here for the first time maybe. Whoa, what have I walked into? Or you've been around a long enough time to feel mad. So here's what you should do. Don't listen to me. Listen to Jesus. Listen to God. What will he tell you? I don't know. You should listen. I'm completely serious. You want to be cautious about the pastor who comes and tells you. Here's what he's saying to you personally. But you should listen. And if Park Church Together will listen, whoever's called to be moving forward will have to be those who first and foremost do not try to do their work without him. You must do it with him. That I can tell you. And in such a way that you see his calling is to be a church for all people. And if you were honest about who you were, you'd have to admit everyone, because you yourself, you know, you with me? And then lastly, to know, without any question, that the simplicity of the mission is to bring people close to him, nothing else. Everything else, let it go. But that one thing, that's the calling. This is a story I wanted to set before you with my last word. It was the first story that I ever shared when I left Princeton to come out to Red Bank to start this, before I even met any of the students who became a part of ORB, what it was called then. It was in May of 2002, where I set before a group of adults the mission that God had given us, and it was this story. And so I kind of wanted to bookend my words with that. But I'm going to say one last word. Thank you. Thank you. And I say that, because this is the way God made life. He made it so that when we interact with others, when he makes our paths cross with others, he changes us through them. Like a weaver bringing new threads into a pattern in ways that we wouldn't expect. And you personally have been woven into me. Some of you only a little bit, but you still have. Some of you have never spoken to me. I see your eyes when I preach. And you've been woven into me. Some of you have given yourself for me and loved me so much. You've changed me forever. I'm completely different. Those of you who have reached out with grace and kindness, you have no idea how grateful I am. And so that's the last word I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You don't have to do that. That feels weird. Let's pray together. God, thank you for all that you've given. I thank you for the ways that you've shaped me and my wife, Michelle, and our kids and our family through the gift of being called to serve you in this way in these days. God, would you heal every hurt in your own time? Would you use the challenges that we face in this day and the days ahead to make us more faithful as your disciples? Would you give us ears to hear what you're calling us to? Would you make yourself known to us like you did to those disciples on that shore? Tell us what to do. God, I thank you that you have created and called into being Park Church. I thank you that you have a great mission for this place moving forward. I pray that each one of us would seek you and that you would make yourself so amazingly known through the mission and ministry of this church in the future that we would look back and say, we never would have imagined. God, I thank you for the gift of the unknown ahead. Use it to teach me and Michelle and then all of us here to trust you more than we have in the past. And then trusting you, make us better witnesses than we've ever been. God, we love you. We love you more than we could ever say. Bring us close to yourself now, even as we sing to you who are our master. God, bring us close in Jesus' name. And all God's people said, amen.